I can't do that. Like, that's a very like big position, and I don't feel with my experience I can, I can get that job.
I want to create solutions which help people.
Be this person I want to be in the future. I have to follow this path.
Seeing their lifestyle, you know, the type of lifestyle that I want.
Africa's blank canvas. Paint your dreams.
Welcome to today's episode. And today I'm joined by someone who I've had the pleasure of meeting face to face, Sibo. What does Sibo do? Sibo is a Global Yoga alum. Right now, she's currently a coordinator at the United States Forest Service. How are you doing, Sibo?
Hi, Tizirai, and thank you for having me on your podcast. Just to let everyone know, this is my first podcast ever, so I'm excited to be here and to be sharing my story and to be having this conversation with you. So yes, I'm great. Thanks.
How has the week been? I see you're a very busy person. Just trying to get this meeting up and running was very difficult because of so many meetings you have.
Yeah, I know. And you know, my supervisors are in the US, and so we coordinate a lot via meetings. So I'm always busy with that. If it's not that, then I have projects that I'm monitoring on ground. So I have projects in Marshworth, and I have projects also just around the country. So if I am not in the office having these meetings, I am trying to do monitoring of our field work that we have all around the country. So yeah, it's been busy, but I'm glad that this week I'm at the office and I'm able to do cool things like this.
That's very wonderful, very busy. It's good to be busy in this day and age, you know. You know what they say, that a restful mind is a very dangerous mind. You know, it usually gets distracted by so many other things. So, Sibo, can you just give us a rundown of your life, just like, you know, growing up in Zimbabwe, how it was like for you just growing up?
Oh, that's so broad. That is so broad. But I'll try and give you highlights of my life. So I was born and raised in Bulawayo. I have stayed in Bulawayo my whole life, only moved to Harare in 2022 when I got this job. So I did my primary school at Coghlan Primary in Bulawayo, and then I did my high school at Bokoma High. Growing up in Zimbabwe and in Bulawayo particularly was, let me say, it had its ups and downs. And I think that's true for every other Zimbabwean living in the realities of what, you know, this country is. It was great. I can say that for my primary schooling, I got one of the best, you know, the best education in Bulawayo, because I was at a very good school, you know, with people from diverse backgrounds. I can testify that, you know, my openness, my open mind and basically who I am as a person came from that type of schooling. And also when I went to high school in Bohoma High School, they call it Velamfundo, which means that where the best education comes from. It was such an honor to be part of like that cohort of students who were, you know, high achievers and high dreamers. And most of my dreams were actually born during that period, you know, from my peers who were like high achievers. They were motivating me. And also people who were like grades levels ahead of me, who I had seen doing, you know, like amazing stuff, were also like an inspiration to my journey. I always say that there is one vivid memory that I remember when I was in high school that shaped my dreams and where I am today. I remember I think I was in form two or I was in form one. I don't remember very clearly on whether I was in form one or form two, but I remember I was at assembly. And they just made an announcement that there were students who had passed their O-level, but they were not coming back for A-level. They were going to study abroad in the UK, and some were going to study in the United States. And I remember this one particular student who had just finished his A-level and was going to Harvard University. So for me, it was an eye-opener, and it was also like a moment of wow. If like a young, you know, student like me from Bohoma High School, you know, which is a school, you know, in the location, like it wasn't a school in town, you know, can go from Bohoma High School to Harvard University, then I know I can do it as well. And so from that day, I know whatever I did, I was trying to get to that point. I told myself that that's where I'm going to end up. And I think that has shaped most of my journey. Yeah, and I don't know if I've answered your question, but that's a story of my life that I always like, that always like comes back to me when I think of, okay, so where did this dream, or where did like your passion of wanting to study in one of the best universities in the world come from? And I know it started from then. So yeah, that's part of it.
Thank you. You answered the question perfectly. You know, it's like you said, it's a very broad question. And most of the time, you're just looking for a simple rundown. So we just get to know who you are. And so it's such amazing that what you said, especially my father always told me that being in positions where you get to see people doing more really motivates you, saying, oh, it is very possible for me to do this also. You know, it's not like if you're really born in Zimbabwe, everyone who was born in Zimbabwe, especially in Africa, knows the hustles and the struggles of life, especially if you're born in an environment where you're secluded and you cannot access some of these things. You grow up just thinking that what you're in right now is only what you can be in. And I remember with you, it was a pleasure. I met you during the post-departure orientation and also the chance of meeting you in the States again. And we met because of Global UGrad World Learning. Can you just tell us how it came, how you got there? You know, where did you see it? Where did you see it through university? Was it just your own Googling? How did you find about Global UGrad? And just a bit of your experience there and how it changed your life.
Okay, all right. So with the Global UGrad, this is how it all started. So, you know, when I then got like to upper six, I was doing a lot of like applications to the United States with my friends. So we're always at the American corner and would just like leave school, go there, apply for universities, and then come back months later to check if, you know, we had been accepted or waitlisted or rejected, etc., etc. And I remember I also did a couple of applications, and most of them I was waitlisted and some I was rejected. And the only school that accepted me did not give me 100% funding. And so I didn't go for undergrad. I was just like, okay, fine. This was my first year trying for application, so I'm going to try next year. And then I was just like, since I'm not going to the US for university right now, let me just go to NUST and be studying there for a year, and then I can, you know, transfer or like start undergrad the following year. And then I went to NUST, and then I just, you know, got comfortable there. And then I started doing school at NUST. And then when the Global UGrad opportunity came, Nomama Bena, who works at the U.S. Embassy, called me because she knew how much I wanted to go to the States. And she had seen how I was applying when I was in upper six. And, you know, she knew that, like, it was always my dream to study in the U.S. So she was like, oh, there's an opportunity that just, like, came by of, like, that just came through, right, of like the global undergraduate. You won't need to go and start afresh. It's just like a semester exchange. I think it's going to be beneficial for your, you know, for your education and for your cultural like enrichment and all of those things. And so when she sent me the link, I was just like, oh, this is just perfect, and it's coming at the right time, and I think this will be beneficial for me. And then I applied, and then months later, that's when I was called to say that I had been accepted. And then after that, you know how the process goes. I was placed at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville. This was my first time in the US, my first time on a plane, my first time. It was a lot of firsts for me. So I can say that it was a very like life-defining moment for me, because of course I had dreamt that I would one day be in that kind of position. But then when the moment finally comes, it's just like so surreal. You're just like, oh, is it me? And then obviously when you know that it's like you know, a once in a lifetime opportunity. And when you know that, you know, you are the only person from your university who was chosen to represent the school and to represent, when you go in the US, you know that when you're from Zimbabwe, you're basically representing your country. And for me, it was like, this is my chance to, like, you know, live the best of my ability, in the best of my abilities, and also to make a change, to make a name for myself. And also, you know, to like network as much as I can, and also to just, you know, take classes that were going to be beneficial in the future for my career, but also take classes that were just going to, you know, like enrich my knowledge about the US and also about just, you know, global development. And so when I went there, I took classes in environmental sustainability, I took African American history, I took public speaking, and I think I took human geography. And all of those subjects were important and skillful for what I'm doing right now. But also my time in the US was just a moment of like self-actualization. You know, you're in a foreign country, and it's just sometimes it can just be you against you. Of course, you can have people around you, but those people also have their own agendas, they have their own dreams and all of that. And you don't have maybe someone from your own country who shares, I don't know, like someone from a similar background. And so now when you're like facing life on your own, it becomes a moment of like coming back to yourself and really like doing some inner work on who am I really, you know, what do I want in this life? What makes me happy? What doesn't make me happy? And you just, and also because you are literally like free, you can do anything that you want. For me, I started like attending basketball matches. Then I was just like, oh my gosh, like I have been missing out my whole life. I think I love this. If I was in Zim, you know, I was never going to know. Not that like people in Zim don't know about basketball, definitely know. But for me, the fact that I had the chance to attend those basketball matches, it ignited something in me that I would have never known. You know, I took public speaking classes. You know, I would just share my story and share like my identity with the rest of the classroom, with people from all around the world who were very curious about myself and, you know, about me, and also just curious about where I'm from. So it was a chance for me to share. And so all of those small things, they really shaped me. And also, you know, like I had dreams, right? But then with that kind of exposure, now for me, it's like I have dreams and I know I can achieve this because I had a dream before and I achieved it. And
I really can relate to you on that part. Like, you know, the aspect of taking rejection is not the end for all. I think that's where most people fail. Like rejection is not the end at the end of the day. It's a redirection. For example, your winter A level, you're pushing and pushing and pushing. Like, I really want to go to the States. I really want to go to the States. And, you know, nothing came out of it. And only a couple of years later, you're given an opportunity that you didn't even look for. It came for you. Just like, yo, we got this, which is going on. Are you interested? And that's the same thing with me. I was in the similar situation. Some of us did our A level during COVID. So our whole life was just a mess, you know, and I'm there applying, trying to go outside. I realized I couldn't go out to the States. So I was like, maybe I'll just go near to Zambia. Then, you know, finances and all those things. And you're like, your family's just like, just go in Zim, you know, and just do it in Zim. Education is education at the end of the day. But if I had taken that with, you know, like saying, ah, it's the end for it, I would have been more open-minded, you know. For example, the opportunity came. Global Ukraine came knocking through an email. For us, it was an email. Like, yo, there's this opportunity. Are you interested? And I'm like, I truly in this situation that when you apply for something, there's really nothing to lose. I feel like a lot of people are like, oh, I don't know what to apply for. What if I get it? I'm like, the worst thing when you apply for anything is you get rejected, you know? And that's how I work. It's just like apply. Sometimes you get in, sometimes you don't. And for me, I got it. And I like the situation you're talking about. You come to a realization of yourself. And I think that is something that I think a lot of Zimbabwean parents always tell us. For example, for me, I'm Shona. My father always told me, Ziwa, which translates to know what you've gone for, know why you're doing what you're doing, and I feel like that opportunity we got to be there and, be away from family, especially being away from your culture, as much as you can be away from family in school, but still in Zimbabwe, there's this limitation which just puts you off just being in Zimbabwe. But when you're not out there, when you feel like there are no boundaries, like you feel like there's nothing holding you back, you really come to look at yourself in the mirror and like anything is possible if I put my mind to it. And it's really inspiring to hear your story, like especially, I feel your pain, 1 year gone, just applying everywhere and especially getting waitlisted, sometimes you get in, like you said, and finances are hard. You're hoping can you give me at least 100% of tuition? Then I can only worry about accommodation. And they're saying, sorry, we can't do that. We can give you this. Then officially, that's why it's funny when I look at Global Ugrad, it's like 100%, not even a single cent
Yeah, I
spent.
know, right? I know. They even give you allowances so that you can so that you can breathe. You don't even work for them. So I think Global Regret is an amazing opportunity. It's always exciting to see young people who go for that opportunity and they get in and they experience what I experienced, because I feel like for me, as I said, it was life changing. So to see more people going through that kind of process for me is just like so exciting, because I'm just like, wow, like I'm happy for you.
I truly understand you because even right now, the Global Ugrad in Zimbabwe, they were doing the application, and some students reached out to me and, like, can you help me out? When you help someone prepare for that interview, you're just trying to give them the best information you know. And when you hear someone saying that I got in, it's like, I'm so happy for you. Like, it's always funny
It's
after
just
they
so
get
exciting.
in. When they get in and I'm saying, oh, what happens now? Oh, I'm like, yo, they're now for you. They're gonna take your application. They're gonna start applying to schools for you. And they're like, oh, do I get to choose where I'm going? I'm like, sorry, unfortunately you don't. You just
No,
have to
you
go with the
don't.
flow. How many people are gonna be chosen? I'm like, when I went there, like it's always different from every court which goes. Like it's always different. You went in 2019, I went in last year. It's always different. It's never the same thing for everyone. So it's like I as much as I want to share, you just have to experience it because it's just going to be completely different from what I went through. And it's really amazing.
I like the placement part where, like, you don't get to choose the school you go to. I feel like you don't get to choose, but whatever placement they give you always get to a place that's like the perfect fit for you, right? Like, for example, I went to University of Tennessee, so their motto was like, the volunteers are like a rocket top, right? So they just, prioritize like service leadership and all of that. And I just felt like that was me, like from when I was in university. Like, for me, service leadership was a thing. I was a prefect, I was in junior council, we're doing a lot of like service to our community, so I felt like I was a perfect fit for that. And then you went to New York and your school had the rugby sport that you were doing. Like, if you had gone to any other school, you were not even going to maybe find a team that was going to, I don't know. You get what I mean? Like, it just ended up being the perfect like fit for you.
Definitely, like you said, just the perfect fit. I went to SUNY, I went to a state university, like, the first time you hear that you're going to a state university, like, what can come out from a state university? You get there, you meet so many lovely people, you experience a whole entire different life from the US you see on TV. Because I like one thing I like about Global Ugrad, it takes you to like the smaller towns that you don't even know that existed, and just being in those small places really makes you appreciate the culture as a whole. Just like, you look at the states on TV, you might feel like, oh, that's not me. But when you find this small isolated town, you're just like, wow, I feel so at home, at peace, It's really an amazing experience. And I think during that experience, it led you to becoming the coordinator. How did that come about, to become a coordinator for Zimbabwe? As Zimbabwe is a country, not of a small area, but as for a country. How did that opportunity come to you?
So this opportunity is, I don't know, the way it came about is not like, oh, because you had gone to the States, oh, here's an opportunity to work for like a US agency while coordinating projects in Zimbabwe. It didn't like come out like that. So for me, Let me first say, first and foremost, I feel like God has, you know, God like penned down my journey in the most perfect way. Like, I had my own plans, right? But he had bigger plans for me, and every single thing has just worked out in my favor. So with this job that I currently have, so when I finished university, I got a job in Plumtree, right? So I was working for International Organization for Migration. I was working with one of the UGRAD students that had gone during our time. So during our year, there was three of us. So he was at UZ, he finished, he got a job at IOM, and then, you know, they moved him to MatSouth in Plumtree. So he was now like managing projects there. And so when an opportunity came in the organization, he encouraged me to apply for it, and I applied, and then I got accepted, and then I went to work there. And so I was doing mostly like data collection, enumeration, supporting programs at the Plumtree Border Post. You know, there's lots of like movement. You know, when it comes to migration, you deal with lots of like immigrants, migrants, regular, non-regular migrants, people who are deported, and all of that. And so it was during the COVID time, and we're doing like a COVID-19 response project. And so I did that for like, I think for almost like close to 2 years. But I remember there was a time when I was feeling really like frustrated, like in the job, like I felt like, okay, I've done this, I've gained the necessary skills, but I feel like I'm not like getting any more, and like I'm not learning any new skills. And I don't think it's, you know, like it's good for like early career, because early career are trying to build your skills so that later on in life you have these solid skills and you can do like any kind of job, because you spent like your first years cultivating, cementing this kind of skills and working on them, right? And so I remember I was very frustrated, and I was like applying for jobs, and I was praying, saying, God, I know like there's more for me, and I know like there's a breakthrough that I need to, you know, go through in order to get to my actual place where I need to be. And so during that time, I got a new supervisor who happened to be a friend as well. And so he was also, his contract was ending, so he was applying for other jobs as well. So one day he gets this job advertisement of like country coordinator, right? And he's like, oh, I think here's a perfect like job for you. It's got like environmental stuff, and I think that's your thing. That's not my thing, but I know that's your thing, right? And so I take the advert, like then I check, you know, the ad, and I'm like, they literally want a country coordinator. Like that's like this, I can't do that. Like that's a very like big position, and I don't feel with my experience I can, you know, I can get that job. So I told him that. I was just like, okay, this is a bit ambitious. Let me just apply for other jobs that I feel like, you know, I will qualify for. But later on, I then like looked at the ad, and I'm just like, okay, I can do this. I can do this. I can do this. Okay, this I can learn on the job. Let me just work on my CV and, you know, put my skills, put my experience, and then, you know, write a cover letter. I wrote a cover letter, and then I applied. And so I applied, and, you know, I think it was around March or something, and then I was applying for other jobs as well during that time. And, you know, I was getting interviews I was being called for interviews for every other job. And this one I had applied and I had forgotten about it, because this is now like in June, I think, or in May. I don't know, this is like 3 months later. And then I get an email one day saying that, oh, we liked your application, you know, like, and we'd like to interview you. So I go through the first interview, and then I got the second interview, and then I got the third interview with, you know, the director and, you know, and the chief of staff of like the United States Forest Service, which was like mind blowing for me, because I was just like, oh my gosh, is this me, you know? And I felt like those were the best interviews of my life, because they sounded exactly like this podcast, where people are interested in like not only in my skills, but like in who I am as a whole. Like they want to know about my life. What's your life story? What are your skills? What are you passionate about? What do you hope to get from this job? Why did you apply for this job? And all of that. So I felt like I was honest and authentic, and You know, what I didn't know, I told them that, you know what, I have no skills in this, but this is something I'm willing to work on. And so later on, like weeks later, I think, or a month later, like my current boss calls me and she's like, oh, I'm so happy you got the job. Happy to have you on my team leading Zimbabwe and all of that. And that was so exciting for me. It was like a dream come true because I had been praying for this job. And now I'm getting a job as like the Zimbabwe country coordinator. How big is that from where I was, right, to just data collection and enumeration? And now I'm like a whole country coordinator. And I remember when my boss called me, she's like, but for now, before we do your paperwork, I just want to know if you have like a valid passport, because I need you to come in the US in 3 weeks, you know, with one of our partner organizations in country. And then I'm just like, wow, I just got a job. Now I get to go back to America. Like, you know, America is, you know, like, you can't just go to America. Of course, I've been there. But like, now this sounded like, you know? And I was just like, yes, I do have. And then like I filled up some forms, blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, the next few weeks I was working on a lot of paperwork and we didn't like get a chance to really explain, you know, what my duties are gonna be, what I'm gonna be doing in the job. And then I went to the US, right, in those in after those 3 weeks with one of our partners in country. So I'm going to tell you this particular part of the story because I feel like it's a very like important like learning curve for me, and it has also like defined how I've reshaped the way my way of thinking and how I am right now, right? So I go to the US, and this is us in the US. We were touring. We're touring the western part of the US. So we arrived in Seattle, in Washington, and then we had some programs that were lined up there for a few days, and then we drove to Oregon, and then Oregon we did a whole lot of tour around that region, you know, like, so it was a native reforestation project. So we have a partner here in country that's doing reforestation of like forests in Marsh West and also in Hunter Valley, and they're doing reforestation using indigenous trees. And so when we were touring and seeing some nurseries in the US, there were lots of like, it sounded like it was like, you know, like an exchange for these guys. So for our partners, it was an exchange for them. They were there to do a look and learn on, okay, how are nurseries operating in the US? What skills and what like kind of operations can we get from them? And, you know, what skills are transferable for their operations here in country? And for me, this was very technical. Of course, I've got like an environmental background, right? But then I don't have like the science of like plant propagation, native trees, what. And at that time, I was just like, oh my gosh, I feel like this is a mistake. I'm not, I won't be able to do any of this job. Like, mind you, I don't know like what I'm supposed to do, right, at the job. Like, I'm just there, you know, I'm just new, like I'm just trying to see what's this about, you know, like what's my role and stuff. And so because it was busy days, my supervisor and I had not like sat down to really say, okay, fine, you are going to be doing this, you are going to be doing this. So I'm just there like, I don't think I'm the perfect fit for this job, you know, like imposter syndrome just. And I'm just like, I don't belong in this room. I don't belong in this seat. Like, this table is not for me. And so instead of like enjoying the moment, trying to learn as much as I can, my thoughts were always like, oh my gosh, they're going to find me out. They're going to, you know, I had those thoughts. And then, you know, like that's when like my supervisor told me that, no, you know, yeah, country coordinator, your job is to do like project management. So you don't have to be like a subject matter expert in like all of the programs that you're going to be doing. Because right now I'm managing a native tree nurseries project. I also have beekeeping, there's mining monitoring, and I'm going to take on other projects as well that are different. So she was just like, no, you're just like an overall coordinator. You are the eyes on the ground for US Forest Service. But even though, like, you know, when you start with these big jobs, it's always like It's a lot of things. I started like the first month when I got back, I had meetings, you know, at the embassy with like big people, you know, like with the ambassador, with, and I mean, in the room with those people. And I'm just questioning myself, like, instead of me going, you know, like I've made it, like I'm here. And I was just like, there is just no way. Like, I miss my old job where like I was confident of what I know. But now, a year later, I opened my mind to learning as much as I can, you know, like trying to take professional development courses from work, asking my supervisor questions. He's one of the most kindest and helpful people, you know, learning from my peers. There's other country coordinators from other countries, like one from Angola, we're almost the same age, you know. I had to reach out to her. She told me a story, she told me experience. And now I am just, I don't know the job 100%, right? But then now I know my the ins and outs of the job. I know who to talk to. I know how to work with partners. I know when to ask questions. I know when to be creative and all of that. And now I'm very confident. Like if you say go and meet the ambassador and tell the ambassador about the job that you're doing, I can do that. And now I've programmed my brain to say God would never put me in a room where I don't belong. Like if there's a seat where they say you're meant to sit here, that's the seat for me. I belong in that table. I belong in that room. I don't care who is there, you know, like I'm equally important and I'm equally capable. So yeah, that's part of the story.
That is amazing. That's a lovely story. I enjoyed all bit of it. Very inspirational. Learned a lot. And I really like the aspect that I personally, I don't believe in anything called luck. So many people who know me know I don't believe in luck.
Yes.
Because I always believe that luck is when opportunity meets preparation. Those 2 years of
Right.
was the foundation, the ground laying. You know, you feel like you're not doing anything those 2 years, you know, and I feel like life was not moving. But you know, it was like the foundation being laid out, you know, especially when you're doing those data numerators, it's like such tedious work, you know, you always have to do above and beyond because you got deadlines, you're trying to meet these people saying you have to go all these places. And is when you look at it growing up and you're doing those 2 years, you're like, it's such a stressful job, and I don't have time to hang out with my friends. I'm always crunching numbers, I'm always doing spreadsheets. But it's all like all the foundation being laid out that when the opportunity finally came across this table. And when you applied it, you know, when you're going to those interviews, all those small things that you used to take for granted begin to show people that this is the person who, even if they don't know what they're doing today, tomorrow they'll know. And that's the thing, I think people should just look at life like that. Sometimes, like when you're going through those hard times and you feel things are not making sense, it's mostly the time, like you say, God has a bigger plan. It's mostly foundation work. It's laying out the foundation. You're trying, it's all the steps that need for you to become the person that you're meant to be. And it's really truly inspirational. I'm inspired by you. It's such, I remember when I met you and you're telling us about your story, I'm just like, wow, it's like this is just amazing, especially looking at you. You're not that far older than me. I'm just like, if she's able to do it, like you said, when you see people like
Then
that,
you can do it.
yeah,
Yeah,
you
you can do it
can.
and you can do it better than me, way better than me. And yeah.
It's truly amazing. And I hope hopefully people who are listening out, they just realize that we're not any superheroes, we're superhumans. We're just two regular Zimbabweans who grew up in Zimbabwe with the same struggle, the same problems, maybe some easier than others and maybe some harder than others, but through, you know, perseverance and, you know, and just showing up every day to do what we need to do, we got to places where we are today. And I'm just really amazed. And one thing I think you didn't tell people about is that there are some benefits of being a forest service, and that is the life of the travel, you know, you're always traveling up and down, which is, I see so many people's, there's some people's, so many people's dream life, you know, like, I wish I could always just travel. And you're telling me most of the times it's maybe every 2 weeks, sometimes every 2 months, you know, it's like the schedule is hectic. And I'm just really impressed by that, especially, you know, for you to be with us when we were at the end of workshop program in the States, you know, just showed that you were on work, but you know, it allows you to be in places where you'd want to be, you know, to share that moment with other people. And just really shows amazing, like all those 2 years in Zimbabwe in Plumtree, doing the mud work, you know, to be able to be like, oh, I want to be in the US in this time for my friends. And you're able to be there, you know, it's really inspiring and amazing. So My next question would be very simple. What's next for SIBO? What's next in the near future? What are some of the goals you're trying to achieve for maybe for the year of 2024?
Ah, and the future, I don't know. Like right now, because I am still growing in the role, right? In my current like coordination role, and I am still taking on a lot of like projects here in Zim, different projects. There's still a huge gap like of learning that I have to do, and there's so many opportunities. And so I'm not thinking of like any higher post than this or any of that. I'm really like trying in the next 3, 4, 5 years to stay in this role and to get a lot of professional development that I can get while in this role, get a lot of exposure, you know, do a lot of networking, meet a lot of people, learn a lot of things, and also like cement my skills in like project management and project coordination. I really have not thought so far of like what I would like to do after this. Though they can, if an opportunity to do like regional, you know, like coordination arises, where like I'm not only coordinating programs in Zimbabwe, but I'm coordinating projects in Southern Africa or in like Africa, Middle East, I would definitely want to take on that, because now I'm already like my supervisor has introduced me to like coordinating projects in Zambia. So I'll be taking on Zambia, and then later on I'll be taking on Botswana. And so I think that's like a soft launch into like a regional coordination like type of position, and something that I'm open to. But yeah, in terms of like my career, I think those are like my goals. And then part of the other work that I want to start like doing during like part-time or like apart from work would be, you know, like doing a lot of like mentoring, especially, you know, for students who want to study abroad or want to go on exchange programs, you know, just doing a lot of like identifying potential students and then working with other like, you know, you graders, like you guys who've just gone there and come back, and then seeing what we can do to help, you know, like people who are interested in like, you know, studying in the US. Because right now, during interview seasons, we had like lots of young students were reaching out to us, you know, asking questions. As you already said, I did get a lot of messages on LinkedIn of young people who wanted like assistance. And some of them, obviously, I had to refer them to other U-graders like Kelvin, because he just came back. You guys just came back. So you really have like your memory is still fresh on some of these things. And so if we work together to identify and build a cohort of students who are like driven and want to travel abroad, and then we help those who are interested to either go for undergraduate or exchange programs or apply for graduate studies, I think that's something that's interesting to me. And also doing something outside of work, like, you know, joining in charity organizations and helping out, you know, going to schools, speaking to young girls, you know, motivating them, sharing my story, you know. Yeah, that's those are things I like. And also a lot of traveling. I wanna do a lot of like personal traveling. I do travel a lot with work, but it's limited where I get to go to. But I really wanna do a lot of traveling as well. And yeah, I think that's just about it.
That is amazing. And you just brought something back to me, as I think you can also remember this when you're applying for Global UGrad. One of the key question they always just ask on that application form is like, what will you do when you come back for your community? And I think you said it by yourself by saying mentoring other people and just helping people to go to the next level and just showing them that there is an opportunity. And those small things do really help the community as a whole. It gives them opportunity. So the more kids that go out there and experience this life, the more they come back with ambition, with different ideas that they can, we can all build upon. And hopefully start making the change you'd want to see, you know. And I'm truly inspired by you. And I say, I think a lot of us who went to the States, hearing your story, you know, and just coming back and seeing how friendly you are and always ready to help us at any times of needs, really gave us that comfort of like, we can do anything if we really put our minds to it. So my last question of the day is just like, what advice would you give to the young people that, you know, or just like about just going outside their comfort zone, and just like applying themselves out there, so they may experience things like global regret or being in a position like you are today. What advice can you give them?
Yeah, I knew this was coming. I knew this question was coming.
It's always
But
coming.
anyways, anyways, what can I say? Okay, I'll say first and foremost, you should never limit your dreams, right? And also look around you. For me, it took me looking around my peers in high school, right? Who came from Bohoma High, but they were getting accepted in Harvard. You know, there's people who've gone to Stanford, there's people who've gone to Williams College, there's people who've gone to, you know, the best universities in the UK. You know, so it took people around me for me to say, if these people can do it, I can do it. So just know that you don't exist in a vacuum. You exist in a community, and in those communities, identify people that you can look up to, you know, people that you who like you can draw inspiration from. It doesn't, I know like people are not perfect, right? So if you're looking at someone's life, just look at that one thing that you like about them. That okay, fine, you know, they're driven, they're goal getters, they are hardworking, they are disciplined, and then you take from that. And also just seeing that it can happen to somebody else, it means it can happen to you. And the second thing is take time to like to work on yourself, right? To come back to yourself and to really ground yourself and think about the life that you want to create for yourself, and think about a lot of aspects that will go into building that dream, right? Whether it's the people you network with, whether it's you doing your own like personal development, you know, whether it's you are, you know, upscaling your skills, whether you are taking time to just you know, like deal with your mental health, taking things slow, being present, whether it's I don't know, I do what you have to do to be in the best position to also, you know, be able to receive the kind of blessings that I have received in my life, because those things can come, but if you're not prepared, it's easy to fumble it, right? Like for example, if I had like allowed that imposter syndrome to get to me, I was never going to be in a position where I really sit down and say, okay, fine, these are my weaknesses, this is where I these skills I lack, this is what I need to develop, this is what I need to work on, because I was always going to be like, oh, I'm not supposed to be here anyway. Oh, and then end up, you know, while sucking at my job and then end up fumbling it. So you need to work on yourself. You need to look around you. Don't put like a cap on your dreams. Dream so much that your dreams also scare you. So yeah, that's what I have.
Thank you for those lovely words of encouragement. There's a lot to unpack from there, and those who have heard have heard. And I really like the situation. Like I always believe, there's a saying of comparison is the, as well as the is the is the thief of joy. Yes. That's what I was looking for. Yeah. So it's like, I feel like most people when they go through these things, they compare instead of trying to learn. You know, I think like you said, learn. Sibo went to the US. How instead of saying, oh, she was lucky, oh, she had a better life than me, learn like how did she do it? Oh, she went through global regret. Can I go through global regret? Oh, maybe global regret is not for you. Like I was saying to some people, like maybe it's not global regret for you. Maybe it's another
Yeah,
fellowship
true.
which will take you there for 6 months, which will take you for 2 years. So it's like when you start seeing those things and you start being open to the possibilities of it, it was of course the idea came from global regret, but that one didn't work out, and you went outside the global regret and looked for more other opportunities. You begin to see all those things, and like you said, imposter syndrome is something that we just have to work on. You just about believing in yourself, like okay, I am here. I think the first thing you said, you have to believe that I am here. There's no way I would be here if I was not qualified to be here. The fact that I am here, it shows that I belong here. And I think if you get that mentality up and running, every time you get into something new, I feel like imposter syndrome will just be a couple of days, a couple of hours And you'd be like, no, that's some bad mindset there. I am here. I belong to be here. So thank you,
Yeah,
Sibo.
true.
Thank you.
Thank you for this opportunity. It's been wonderful having this conversation with you. And yeah, wishing you the best in your podcast. Hope you interview other young people who are going to inspire other young people and inspire young people. And yeah, this is great.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. Make sure to subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to. Also, make sure to follow us on Instagram, Africa's Blank Canvas Podcast, so you're always up to date with the latest news. Don't forget to share. That's the only way we grow.